You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Made it to a Friday. It's hour one. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. It's a meat Friday. I have no idea what's going on the Traeger today. I just know there's some pimento cheese kind of sandwiches, maybe, in honor of the Masters. Yes, Paulie?
I've heard rumors of pimento cheese burgers. I've heard rumors of something else like a mac and cheese with bacon and pimento. The rumors I'm hearing.
Okay. Speaking of the Masters, Mike Tirico will join us from Augusta coming up here in a moment. I thought the course was the big winner yesterday. We'll ask Mike if that was done intentionally to make these golfers. You know, some of these golfers talked about being in a heavyweight fight. Sergio Garcia said, you know, I felt like I went toe-to-toe with Evander Holyfield. Another golfer said, I felt like I was fighting Mike Tyson out there. So we'll talk to Mike Tirico about that and what we can expect over the next couple of days there. We'll check in with the Patriots. Peter Schrager from the NFL Network, our good buddy, has his mock draft, and he's talking about the Patriots moving up to number 4 to take Justin Fields. Very unpatriot-like, but we'll talk to Tom E. Kern, who covers the Patriots. Is this something that Belichick is going to do? And would the Falcons be willing to trade out of that number 4 spot? That's the pick. You know, if anybody's moving up, they're moving up to 4 because, you know, San Francisco has, locked in at 3. You got the Jets at 2 and you got Jacksonville at 1. 4 is the one that's sort of hanging in the balance there. Do the Falcons go for Matt Ryan's replacement? Do they go for one of these skill position players or do they trade out? Yes, McLovin.
I was just wondering, shouldn't Atlanta trade either the 3 pick or the 28 pick to the Patriots?
Oh,
you see what I did there?
Okay.
You know how you won't trade within division. Do you trade with a team who beat you in the Super Bowl?
Well, I did wonder about that, too. I did wonder about that. Yes, Paulie.
How about this? The Patriots don't trade up. They actually, the Falcons take a quarterback with the 4th pick, and they trade Matt Ryan back home to Boston to the Patriots.
Well, he's from Philly.
Yeah, kind of. I'm shoehorning a little bit with the BC thing.
We went to BC, but
for 3 years.
Not exactly going home, but yeah, I see what you're doing.
Stoking it up.
Yeah. So we'll talk to Tom E. Curran. The wrestler, The Miz, is going to join us. WrestleMania coming up this weekend. He started on The Real World. He's from Ohio. He went to Miami University. Now, that's a preppy school. Paulie's sister went there.
Yep.
Jenny Bacci, my longtime girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah, Jenny Bacci went to... I told you this story, the uncomfortable story.
Did you drive down there?
I did one of those, you know what, late at night, and I'm with my guys, and of course we're all single, and we decide to do a road trip to go to Miami, and I go to her dorm, I knock on her door, you know, to ask if Jenny can come out, and then she said, like... What are you doing here? Oh. Like, you don't want to hear, what are you doing here? And I said, I don't know. I thought it'd be a good idea. And I think she had a boyfriend over at the time.
So she didn't say, hey, what are you doing here?
No. It was like, what are you doing here? Yeah. So I don't have fond memories of Miami, of Ohio. Because I went to Dayton and, there was a little bit of a rivalry there. Yes, Paulie.
The next morning, you were standing outside with a boombox playing Peter Gabriel, weren't you?
I did feel a little bit like John Cusack. I was Lloyd Dobler, and I'm outside, and I'm trying to, capture Jenny Batchy's heart, and she gave me a pen. That might have been the last time I saw Jenny Batchy. That might have been. You know, I feel bad for her, because she could have all of this. All of this she could have, but no, she's happily married, living somewhere in Toledo, Ohio. Yes, McLovin.
So isn't Miami the crazy football coach school? Is that where they all of them come from?
It's called Cradle of Coaches.
But I've never heard of their football program. Like, do they still play at a high level? Are they good? Or
well, they got Ben Roethlisberger played there. Sean McVay played there. Miami's a good program.
Didn't Chen Beckler and Woody Hayes both come from there?
It's unbelievable. And Weeb Eubank, who coached the Jets. Paul Brown.
Eric Parsegian, who went to Notre Dame, got a start there. Wow. John Harbaugh.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's why when I bring up how many schools have coaches who have won Super Bowls And Dayton has two. We have John Gruden and we have Chuck Knoll. But Miami of Ohio, or Miami University, as they like to call it, I'm going to guess they got a few Super Bowls there as well.
Do you root against those Super Bowl teams because the coaches went to Miami of Ohio?
No.
Because of the Jenny Batchy situation?
No.
A little bit?
No, no. I'm past the Jenny Batchy situation.
No chance.
I'm so past that. I think it was last year that I moved past Jenny Batchy. But now The Miz is going to join us, and now it brings back all those memories. Because The Miz looks like a guy who went to Miami of Ohio, and he would have dated a Jenny Batchy. Yes, Seton.
By the way, quick shout out, Fox Sports 1230 WCWA, an absolute flamethrower in Toledo, probably where Jenny Batchy's listening right now.
Yeah, or her husband, Tim.
Or that guy.
Yeah, his name's Tim.
Hmm.
Yeah. And you know what? Good for Tim. I'm happy. As long as Jenny's happy, then I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
I have moved on. Yes, Todd?
Could you be friends with that guy? Could you ever be friends with the husband of a girl that you had a big crush on or wanted to be with?
Absolutely.
I don't think I could do that.
Well, I would have to do that for quite a few because they always moved on to somebody better. It's like, you know, I can't really hold a grudge. I mean, it's not Jenny's fault. I don't know what she saw in me in the first place except for a jumper. I mean, an unbelievable outside shooter. By the way, welcome to Masters Week here on the program. Mike Tirico will join us coming up here in a little bit, and The Miz will join us as well. This program brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. They go far beyond from their customization options, cutting-edge tech, five-star sales service, financial support crew. Mercedes-Benz Vans are built, equipped, and engineered to be ready for anything. Go the extra mile, taking the all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. Say good morning to Peacock. It's our TV partner and our radio affiliates around the country. Hype and excitement about a golf are really nice, but a lot of times they don't mean that much when the tournament starts. Bryson DeChambeau, he arrived at Augusta, big expectations. And we thought, oh, he's got something secret in his bag, a new driver. He's going to take Augusta down with him. Well, it doesn't always work that way. He ended day one at 4 over par. His worst round at Augusta as a pro. He's 11 shots off the lead and probably will be in danger of missing the cut, but he wasn't alone. The conditions were a whole lot tougher than last November. And I don't know if Augusta said, you kind of embarrassed the course last November when Dustin Johnson took it apart. Well, we're going to toughen it up a little bit here. And I'll ask Mike Tirico if this was done intentionally. But, you know, the greens were slick. They were so hard. You know, when you're trying to just keep it on, it's like trying to keep a golf ball on a pool table, you know, when you're chipping or even putting. You know, be on a basketball court. Tiger Woods used to go to the basketball court at Stanford, and he practiced putting on the basketball court just to get ready for fast greens. Dustin Johnson set the course record back in November. Now he's 2 over par. Rory McIlroy is tied with DeChambeau. One guy seems immune to all of this, and that's the Englishman. It's Justin Rose. 4-stroke lead at 7-under. Normally, you take the guy who gets out early on Thursday, then he plays later on Friday. I think if you look at, you know, the past 10 winners, 8 of the last 10, I think, started out that way. Not the other way around, where later on Thursday, then early on Friday. But he's got a 4-stroke lead. A lot of golf left to be played, but it seems like the course right now is the leader. Paulie, you got an update on anybody?
Yeah, Justin Rose, he tees off in about 20 minutes. Matsuyama's 3-under. Webb Simpson, 2-under. Patrick Reed, 2-under. Some of our people are not doing well. Some of ours are, I don't know. Oof.
We had our snake draft yesterday.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka's +2 yesterday, but Bubba Watson +2, Dustin Johnson +2. It's early.
Yeah, but those are fine. +2's fine. It's when you get to...
What about Jason Day being +5?
Well, he's going to teeter on the brink here.
What about Patrick Cantlay being +7?
Yeah, that's my guy. That's not good.
No offense.
Not good. Yeah. Oh, we had our draft. There's nothing at stake, right? I think we just... Is this competition? That's it? Bragging rights? Is that all we're doing? Yeah, I'm a club.
We're not going to get that cool Ric Flair robe. That's not going to happen. You can't talk Darius into putting that in the pool.
No, I don't think that's fair to Darius to throw his Ric Flair robe in there that he spent $50,000 on.
Worth every penny, by the way.
Yes, it is. At least for him. The other story we've been talking about is what happened in the Mets game. And this is, you know, a walk-off hit by pitch. Doesn't happen that often, but this is the home opener. The Mets are facing the Marlins. The Mets come into the bottom of the ninth. They're down 2-1. Jeff McNeil ties the score with a home run. The Mets had a couple of hits and then a walk, loaded the bases. Michael Conforto came up on a 1-2 pitch from Anthony Bass, and then this happened.
Now the 1-2 pitch. Breaking ball in there. Strike three call.
It hit him.
And they're saying it nicked him on the arm. The game is over. It was called a strike initially, but then it was ruled that the ball hit Conforto. Michael gets to first base. The Mets are pounding on him. And in a very unusual scene, Don Mattingly is saying, hold the phone. We want to check this out. Meanwhile, the Mets are celebrating a 3-2 win.
Howie Rose with the call. Here's Don Mattingly after the game, the Marlins manager.
He knows it was a strike, and there was nothing he couldn't go backwards in his mind. Honestly, he's probably feeling bad. To be honest with you, I bet he feels awful because they don't want to do that either. All right, they don't want to mess the game. I mean, not necessarily mess the game up, but they don't want to end like that. You don't want to strike. But it's probably too late.
Keith Hernandez, who was part of the broadcast team with Ron Darling, they work for the Mets, and they both agreed that it was a bad call, and the Mets won the game. We hope to have Keith joining us next hour. The umpire, Ron Culpa, said that he should have called Michael Conforto out on the walk-off hit by pitch. You have replay, but the replay is only to see if he got hit by the pitch, not the intent of leaning into the pitch. But after the game, the umpire said that Conforto should have been called out for leaning into the pitch in the strike zone instead of being awarded first base on a hit by pitch. Culpa then goes on to say it's one of those plays where it looked like the guy was hit by the pitch in the strike zone. No, it was that play where he did get hit by the pitch in the strike zone. He did lean in to the pitch there. And they still have that armor on. I thought they were outlawing that. Remember when Bonds used to go up there and, you know, he looked like somebody out of medieval times? Like he was Game of Thrones before Game of Thrones. Yeah, Paulie.
The umpire's name, Ron Mia Culpa.
Oh, whoa. All right.
Suck it back row.
Wow.
Specifically me.
That is an early shot. Early shot. Paulie, no, can't walk off.
Yeah, meet Friday, would never leave.
Yeah, not yet.
Been sitting on that for an hour.
Yeah, not yet.
Can we just not glance over the fact that Todd just said, suck it back row, specifically me?
Well, I don't want to drag McLovers to that. That was a shot directly.
Somehow Andrew got it.
Yeah. Yeah,
specifically me.
How come the umpire can't just say, like, let it go, like, play on? It didn't really hit him. I mean, to breathe, to graze. It grazed him. It didn't hit
him. But it did hit him. I don't think you can go, it sort of hit you. It didn't, you didn't get hurt by it.
It didn't even hit him enough to send the ball off course.
It sent it into the strike zone even further.
Yeah.
Like, it was, hey, do you think it was a strike? Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, McLovin.
So I think he would have been called a strike on batter interference. What if it was a ball and he hit it at that and he leaned into it a little bit and just nicked him? Would they have called a strike? I mean, there's so many different things there.
Do you respect Michael Conforto for doing what it takes to win the game? If he did it on purpose, it certainly looked like it. Let's put it this way. He didn't get out of the way. He didn't go, oh, I got to get out of the way. Yes, Todd.
It's weak. It's Bush League. The strike and the strike zone, by the way, whatever the rule is, it has to be changed. The strike zone belongs to the pitcher. That's why they have goaltending in basketball. There's a point where you got to leave it alone and the ball has to be allowed to go into the basket. You can't just swat it away while it's rolling around the rim. That would be my analogy to it. If the pitch is a strike, it's a strike. You can't block the strike zone with your body.
Well, what if you're leaning in, you're actually, guys who've gotten hit by a pitch while swinging, taking a full swing.
You could crowd the plate, but if it's a strike, if it's in the strike zone, it's got to be called a strike. I don't care where it hits you.
Yes, McLovin?
No, that's the umpire's job. That's not the hitter's job. Like, you know, if he's crowding, if he goes over the plate, obviously he doesn't expect to get that. But I think a hitter deserves credit for taking one for the team. I mean, this is a guy whose team had a garbage can banging. Like, it's not cheating like that. It's cool. I mean, it's good for the team.
I think Conforto hit the ball, not the other way around. And I get gamesmanship. Would I have done it? Yes, I would have.
But taking one for the team means the ball is drastically inside. You stand there and take the hit and don't avoid it. This wasn't that. This was a pitch he dipped his elbow in to win the game. It wasn't, you know, taking one for the team means standing there when you're going to get hit on a pitch that's not in a strike zone.
Yeah.
It felt different.
But he was still, you know what? It's not up to him to officiate the game. So you do whatever you can do. Like when you see somebody take a charge, and it's not really a charge, and they, oh my God, or you see what happens in soccer where somebody's like, oh, you shot me. Okay. Like, you're trying whatever it takes. Now, you have to look at yourself in the mirror when it's all said and done. Here is Michael Conforto after the walk-off hit-by-pitch.
From my point of view, you know, it was a slider. Felt like it was coming back to me, and I just, you know, I turned. There may have been a little lift of my elbow just out of habit, out of reaction, and it barely skimmed the edge of my elbow guard. So, you know, I knew there was going to be some controversy. Our first base coach was yelling at me to get down there, touch the base, and let's get out of here. You know, like I said, I a win's a win. It's over. But obviously, I'd like to use the bat next time, for sure.
Picking his words carefully, I've had my kids have excuses like that before, where you're going, yeah, but you still did it, right? Yeah, I did. Yeah, Seton.
I just don't believe the idea, though, that he was able to move his elbow 2 inches into the ball like that deliberately. Like, I just don't think anyone is that precise.
Oh, my God. It happens all the time.
Yeah, no, I think that people get in the way of the pitch and they get hit by the pitch on purpose.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's an example of it. I really don't. When it's that fast, and so he just... that slightest wiggle to barely graze the ball. Mm-hmm. I just think it's an unlucky play. I don't think that he's that talented or that much in control of his body. I'm sorry, Michael. I just don't believe that.
I do wholeheartedly. Those guys know what they're doing. First of all, base is loaded. And you want to, maybe a wild pitch, whatever it is, you want to get on base or you want to bring that run in. You crowd the plate a little bit more. Make the strike zone smaller, crouch down a little bit more, make that pitcher think, I got to make a perfect pitch there. And it was a good pitch. Yes, McLovin.
I agree with Seton. I think he was so fooled by the pitch. If he was trying to do it purposely, he would have gotten hit squarely. The fact that he got grazed makes me feel that there was a lucky accident.
Did you hear him? Like, yeah. He knows he got away with something. He goes, maybe I lifted my elbow up a little bit there.
But see, he's saying maybe there may have been a slight elbow lift for people like you who are going to be like, yeah, see?
Wait, he admitted it.
No, he didn't. He was just like, there's going to be crazy people who think that I did this on purpose.
Wait. Let's hear Michael Conforto again. I'm not going down swinging.
From my point of view, you know, it was a slider. Felt like it was coming back to me, and I just, you know, I turned. There may have been a little lift of my elbow just out of habit, out of reaction, and it barely skimmed the edge of my elbow guards.
Laughing nervously? Yep.
Yeah.
Guilty.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yes, McLovin.
He had no idea where that pitch was. I'm watching the play. He had no idea where the pitch was going. He was fooled. He swang three different ways at a... He said it was a slider coming in. It was a slider going away from him. He had no idea where that thing was going.
First of all, is swang a word?
He swang.
Swang?
And we were swanging.
He was swanging.
Yes, Todd. It was very...
But you know what? Swang sounds better than swinged.
Swing-a-doo-doo. Yes, Todd?
I found it very Little League-esque. Like when the coach realizes that the only way this guy's going to get on base is if he takes one for the team and leans in from Bad News Bears or any Little League situation where, oh, we got this guy coming up and encouraging him to, like, I don't know if I'm able to hit it, so I'm going to get hit by the ball.
You guys are crazy.
Weak.
You guys are crazy. He leaned into it. He did what he wanted to do. Get on base. That's it. Get on base. That's all you have to do. Bring in that game-winning run. Yes, Paul.
According to the dictionary, swung is the past tense and past participle for swing. That said, swang is not official, but gets used sometimes.
No, it is. It's a past tense of swing as well in the Merriam's dictionary. Swang is totally a word.
Merriam doesn't know baseball.
Yeah. Merriam didn't even play.
As far as we know.
Oh, she might have been on A League of Their Own with Madonna.
Remember the swangin' 20s? It sounds cooler than swinging. The swangin' 20s.
Let me take a break. Mike Tirico's got hosting duties at Augusta, and I got to get to him soon here. But, you know, I'll ask Tirico about that, too, the Conforto.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll talk about the Masters.
So Fritzy wanted to be a swanger, not a swinger his whole life.
Exactly.
22 after the hour. Just getting started on this Friday, Dan and the Danette, Dan Patrick Show. I've been telling you about Built Bar for a while. Now, I got some flavors here. You guys ready for this?
How many flavors, Dan?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I got 9 flavors. Coconut almond. How about if I just say, if you've had these flavors here? Coconut almond.
Yes.
Mint brownie.
Yes.
Salted caramel.
Yes.
I'm waiting for the all of the above at the end.
Raspberry.
Yes.
Peanut butter brownie.
Yeah, that's mine.
Coconut. Yes. Double chocolate.
Ah, double chocolate.
Cookies and cream.
Guilty as charged.
I know that. Cherry Barcia.
Yes.
I don't even know if that's Cherry Barcia.
Oh, instead of Cherry Garcia, they're playing off of a bar. I see what they did.
It's
actually Cherry Barca.
Barca. Use the promo code DP10 at checkout. Get 10% off your order. BuiltBar.com. It's a healthy bar for you. High protein, low carb, low sugar, gluten free. BuiltBar.com. Promo code DP10. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Penny's Bang Biscuits, you can find them on danpatrick.com. Penny was a rescue. She's our house dog here. We're giving 20% of all Bang Biscuit sales to handpicked partners in the pet industry. Do want to give a shout out to East Coast Canine Rescue. That's where we got Penny from. But you can shop for the biscuits. They are gourmet dog biscuits from made from scratch using healthy, all-natural ingredients. Built, you can go to danpatrick.com. I was talking about what happened with the Mets game at the end of the game. Michael Conforto, a walk-off hit by pitch. And what stood out not only from the call that was missed, but the Mets announcers disagreeing with the ump's call in the field. So the Mets announcers, Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez, had this reaction with the walk-off hit by pitch.
This is a strike,
yep.
And he gets hit. Look at that. Oh, you can't do that.
They have totally got
a case.
They got
to bring
here.
It back.
Totally have
yes.
a case.
They're
gonna,
it's absolute.
It's he stuck his elbow right into that pitch.
It's going to be strike three.
Strike and
three,
the umpires
two
are
outs.
Conferring, and let's see.
All right, so that is a little bit longer explanation. Ron Darling, Keith Hernandez, former major leaguers. Keith is going to join us a little bit later on in the show. Let me start there with Mike Tirico, who joins us from Augusta. We've been talking about Conforto leans in on the pitch. What did you make of that, Mike?
So I always wondered when I did the NBA games, and they, I thought, did a good job of using replay. I always thought when you go to replay and you see that you screwed up a call, how do you feel, right? And that's exactly the case. And I just saw the clip of it on social media, so I didn't see the entirety of it. But what Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling and Gary Cohen were saying is exactly right. If you can go to replay, get it right. That's what we all want at the end of the day. It seems as though replay in every sport has gotten so involved that it's lost any common sensibility to be applied. And there you say, yeah, okay, we're not supposed to look at that. But you know what? He moves his elbow in to strike out. Let's move on. Common sense. It would be nice if we could apply some common sense to stuff a little bit more these days.
But I was also wondering that the umpire can only do so much because of what the rule is, that they can't
right.
they can't rule on intent, that they know they made the wrong call because he did lean in, but they don't have the authority to be able to overturn that.
That's the problem. Once, and here's where I think you can maybe use this a little bit better, because it's not the official right there looking at the replay, making the decision. It's going back to the global headquarters, right? Or it's going back to MLB. MLB can make that decision. You're right there. So expand, add some elasticity to the powers of replay. The league office can say, okay, I know we didn't have line 73 addendum B to replay when the guy puts his armor in the strike zone, but let's make sense of this. And this is the right thing to do. And you know what? At the end of the day, the Mets may have said it doesn't go with line 73 note B, but it's the right thing. Cause you could see his postgame soundbite was pretty good. He totally looked like the canary. He ate the canary there. He's just kind of, yeah. I kind of leaned in a little bit.
But do you respect him for doing that?
Yes. 1,000%.
Okay.
For saying it or for doing it?
No, for doing it.
For doing it? I hate the fact that the guys with that armor, and we talked about this with Bonds, right? Years ago. It's different. You can crowd the plate in a different way than guys used to. I don't like all that body armor for batters, but that ship has long sailed.
We're talking to Mike Tirico, joining us from Augusta. The course play tough intentionally yesterday?
I think that there's two things. It's not really the 20 under par was November. We're not going to let that happen again. I think the U.S. Open for a long time had lived with, we've got to get a score somewhere around even par. I don't think that's been the case with the Masters. You've been here so many times. Think about Sundays. They want those eagle opportunities and those roars. That's what's made the Masters special. So they're not allergic to great scoring. I do think that there's been a desire over the years to keep the distance in check. And look at fast and firm and what it did to the guys who hit it a long way. There were struggles for a lot of them on day one. So I think the defense is remaining on course, especially this one, to keep relevant. And where it bounced again, as it felt fair, Justin Rose had an 11-hole stretch where he went 9-under. So it was not U.S. Open impossible. It was playable for great scores and a great day. And Justin Rose had 11 great holes.
How great is DeChambeau for TV?
I think he's great for the sport, which in turn is great for TV. So I want to go back to Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer tournament, and the sixth hole where he's trying to drive it over the water, 340 yards, right? That scene of people with their cameras videotaping it, and the guy who's like 5'6" deep, or lady, I don't know who it was, but that scene where you get all the arms, it looked like a rock concert, right? And then DeChambeau's like, yeah, I did it, right? I think that's great. So I thought, we talked about this a lot when we were working together when Tiger showed up on the scene. We all thought it would bring minorities to the game. I think what it did was bring athletes to the game. And it brought casual golf fans to the TV, Dan, I think, because anytime Tiger got over a shot, he might do something that you'll talk about for a long time. Like, nobody was saying, I've got to watch the Canadian Open, because when Tiger gets to the bunker, he may hit this sick shot out of a bunker over water and land it this close, right? DeChambeau's the same kind of thing. Like, he's spraying it all over Augusta, but I can't wait to watch. Where is he going to drive it on 13? Is he going to take it over the trees on the left? Is he going to go down where the patrons are on 14? So I think that element is sensational for the sport.
There's a curiosity, but it's got to have a payoff, it feels like. With Tiger, you were watching something that was going to inevitably have a payoff where he was going to win. DeChambeau's a curiosity to me. Until he... you know, he starts winning on a consistent basis where he's, you know, Koepka, you know, Brooks Koepka is a better golfer than DeChambeau, but DeChambeau mm-hmm. is more of a curiosity here.
But DeChambeau did win a U.S. Open at a really tough course in Wingfoot, mm-hmm. right? So I think that plus backed up with wins. Look, he's won Arnold's tournament. He's won Jack's tournament at the Memorial. He won the U.S. Amateur. So it's not as though it's all the circus show. These played great golf, difficult golf courses, tough events to win. So I think there's a lot of curiosity, but I do think there's enough there that it's not just a sideshow. I think it's really effective. Dan, I spent some time with him in the fall. I think he's as fascinating an athlete, not just a golfer, an athlete, as we have in sports because of his approach. And you talk to him, and it seems like a little mad scientist, but he's thought it all out and he's processed it and he's got a plan. And I just like that it's unique and he's willing to be the salmon. He's willing to swim upstream and do this in a different way.
Well, I liken him to Elon Musk. I think that there's something about his approach where you go, I don't know. You know, but we've seen Elon Musk is a billionaire and has proven everybody wrong. And maybe DeChambeau does that. And you bring up valid points with, you know, he did win at Wingfoot, which is a tough, tough course to win on. And were you guys hanging out in the weight room? Were you spotting him while he was lifting weights?
Protein shakes. I was making protein shakes for him on a regular basis. I'm the shake man. just chance to interview him and talk to him and just spend a little more time than just, hey, a quick hello on the range. And it was fascinating to see how much he's thought about things. See, I think of you as kind of a DeChambeau and Elon Musk, go against the grain, do things that others are not expecting, you know, become a billionaire. I think you fit that category as well. Maybe you should connect more with Bryson.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't want to say it. I'm glad that you said it. Before I let you go, I've been to Augusta a few times, but if somebody has never been there, like the first thing that is going to wow them is what?
How beautiful it is. How there's not a piece of trash or a weed growing. There's nothing wrong with anything you see. And then there was someone here, a coworker of mine. I took him down to the ninth fairway, the crosswalk at nine, because you've seen it many, many, many times on TV. But until you go across that crosswalk and you're about 20 yards ahead of where the players hit their second shot and you look up and all you can see is the front lobe of the green that doesn't hold any shots. That's the one that just sticks with people that, wow, the elevation changes are out of this world. TV cannot and does not do it justice. When they see that, usually the impression is, wow, I never realized that. And those things stick out, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah, I think it's great when you go there, and it's sensory overload. But the one thing that stood out was when you walk that course, that's a workout. Like, you know, you get the feeling, well, it's in Augusta, Georgia. It's got to be flat. There is so much elevation there. That was the biggest surprise. Like that shot on 18 going up the hill. Like you're going up a mountain there, it feels like at times.
We had a player in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. She was in the bunker. She jumped twice. And her caddy, who's her coach at the University of Houston, said, aim for the top of the TV tower. And she's like, I can't see the top of the TV tower. It gives you a sense. When you were here in the 90s doing SportsCenter stuff, were you here with Jim Colbert as one of your analysts?
Yes, yes.
I remember that. Gosh, I remember that.
Yes.
Jim Colbert.
He would do the whatever that was, like, you know, he would be shooting, he'd be shooting a gun or saying, yeah.
And he'd do that when he used to make a birdie on the Champions Tour, the Senior Tour, that he'd do that. Yeah, exactly right. A name came up randomly when I was driving down Washington Road past where you guys used to do the show across from Augusta National.
Yeah. I think it was called the Double Eagle Club.
Double Eagle. It's still there.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I don't know if I knew what I was doing back then, but, you know, I got to see – I was there when Faldo came back and beat Norman, and Rick Riley had the famous quote, because I talked to him on Saturday, and I said, what do you think is going to happen? He said, Greg Norman always finds the banana peel. I'll never forget that. And then years later, got a chance to sit down with Norman, and we revisited that day and what it meant to him and how it impacted him. And, you know, he was a professional in looking back on it. He said, look, I beat myself. Nick didn't beat me. I beat myself. But, hey, I'm the one that hit the shots. He was brutally honest with himself. And that's what I love about this sport. Like, you will find guys who will just kind of pour out their emotions and let you know exactly, you know, how this felt. Like Jordan Spieth when he lost the Masters at 12, or Rory when he goes sideways. You get into that press tent, and it just feels like it's a confessional for a lot of these guys.
Well, Dan, that's why I've loved my association with golf, and this is now 24 years since I started covering golf on a regular basis. What I love is that it's you and your score into perpetuity. There's no offensive coordinator to blame for a bad play call. You can't say the offensive line was banged up and not protecting me. It's just you. You know, your caddy may hand you a club, but you can always say no. So that's what I love about their honesty. It's refreshing calling rules and fractions on yourself. It is a great game. You have to remind yourself of that sometimes when you try to play it like these guys do. And you realize how good even the lower guys in the tour really are.
Good to talk to you, Mike, as always. Have fun today. We appreciate your time. Safe travels.
Same here. Miss you, bud. Look forward to seeing you soon.
It's Mike Tirico. He'll be working today with the golf coverage and keeping an eye on the leaderboard there. We got our play of the day coming up. We'll settle on our poll question. We're back after this on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, my God.
The play. The play's called play. Of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
I'm gonna play it and play it.
This is the play of the day.
Check this out.
Oh, this one's straight out of net. Michaelson in the hole! Tommy Fleetwood takes dead aim and makes a one.
Tommy Fleetwood. First hole-in-one in the opening round of the Masters since 2013. That's courtesy of CBS Sports. Play of the day brought to you by M-Drive. Powerful ingredients backed by science. Help me get energized, stronger, leaner. Go to mdrivedan.com today. Get free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't let age beat you. Refine your prime with M-Drive. There was a moment yesterday. Abraham Answer was in the bunker in the sand trap. And the camera angles right behind his ball. And you see him tap down some of the sand. You can't make any contact with anything. Once you get in that bunker, you can't make any contact with the ground or the sand. Nothing. Can't do anything to improve your lie. And he did that. He tapped down the sand. And then you see the shot being hit. Yes, Eden.
I think saying tap down is a gross mischaracterization of what happened.
Slanderous.
I think if he accidentally tapped down, perhaps.
It doesn't matter. Oh. Intent doesn't matter. He improved his lie in the bunker.
You can still see daylight under his club. How much could he have possibly tapped it down?
I'm just saying, Seton, these are the rules. Okay? You have to abide by the rules.
Are those the rules that are there in person or when you're watching on TV?
Well, I think somebody may have called in.
I think somebody just cheated.
Yes, Paulie.
We it seems like we do this every year where something on TV and someone calls in. There should be nobody picking up the phones. There should be nobody checking Twitter. The officials should adjudicate the hole. And when the hole is over, the hole is over. It's history. It's a historical fact.
It doesn't work that way.
Right. But like once he gets his score, doesn't his score affect his strategy on the holes going forward?
It could, yes.
So he should know that when he finishes that hole, my score is done.
Maybe. I don't know how long it took for him to find out.
It was 13 hours. It was after the round was over, he found out. He was told after his round completed.
Now, I hate that, but they don't have a rules official with every golfer. Now, you can call in a rules official.
You could literally call in.
You can call in and act like a rules official.
1-800-NARC.
No, it's egregious. You can't improve your lie in the bunker.
Hey, Mr. Sterritore? Yeah, Gene? Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think there was holding on that play. Thanks.
I think there was pass interference on that.
That was a kick. Calvin Johnson caught that. Thank you. Okay, we'll change the call.
Okay, what's the worst call? Michael Conforto leaning in, getting hit, or Abraham Answer trying to improve his lie?
Abraham was hoping allegedly they wouldn't answer the phones.
Not really, but
it wasn't that good. But
I don't even know what that means. Yeah. He's honest Abe. He's right.
Dishonest
Abe. I would never tell a lie.
And it was on a lie.
Four score. That's like plus four.
Oh.
On that hole.
Okay. All right.
Not really.
Maybe it was a par four. Maybe it was a four score.
He addressed the ball poorly.
Okay. No, you got to call that. Now, I don't like when people call in, but and it's 13 hours after your round is over and you go, hey, what'd you shoot today? Oh, I shot a 77. No, you shot a 79. Yes, Todd.
When you call in, do you have to identify yourself in any way? It's just an anonymous tip. How does that work exactly?
I don't think you have to. Like
calling into the show, like I'm Brian in Tuskegee, and I just saw what happened there with Abraham.
I don't think they go Masters tip line. Like Tony Romo's there with the Corona, you know, tip line. I don't think you have somebody there going, hello, Masters tip line.
You disguise your voice because you feel bad that you're I just saw something and took the ball.
Or it's somebody who played in the, you know, the twosome or threesome with Abraham Answer. You know, it's Justin Rose trying to disguise his voice, his English accent.
I don't want to say that there was so. I don't understand.
Darn it. Yes, Paul.
Abraham Answer should get the name of the person who narked him out. He should be able to go to his work and watch him work and see if he breaks any rules.
Stock. I think, Jim just took extra paper clips. How do you like that?
He left at 4:58.
I think if we did a Mount Rushmore of worst people in all of sports, the very first person I would put up there is someone who calls the golf tip line to say, I think somebody just broke a rule.
So the worst people in sports.
Worst people in sports.
Mm.
The Mount Rushmore, bad sports people?
The person who calls the tip line.
The Narcs.
Right.
Yeah.
Phillies fans.
Wow, McLovin.
That's actually a slight to Eagles fans.
Eagles fans and then Flyers fans.
Phillies fans are fine. It's the Eagles fans you got to watch out for.
Don't leave out the Eagles fans. Having been there up close and personal. Yes, Paulie.
The guy I don't like at games is the guy who's sitting in row three and turns around and yells at the fans, come on, let's get up. And he yells at you, and he's not watching the action on the field because he's so concerned about getting the fans in the section up. That guy's third.
Did we settle on a poll question today? What happened?
No, I did actually put up, do you respect Michael Conforto for taking that pitch for the team?
Okay.
60% say yes.
It's not up to me to, you know, have you govern the sport. My job is to get on base, whatever way. I mean, guys do this all the time. You know, the soccer player who falls down trying to get, you know, it's not like Maradona said, oh, I touched the ball with my hand. My bad. Hey, you should call that. It's up to you to officiate the game. Michael Conforto did what he thought he needed to do in that moment. There was an opportunity that was presented to him. He took advantage of the opportunity. Yeah, McLovin.
Related, I want our two poll to get into, are athletes today soft? I know it's a general question, and you know where I'm getting it from, but kind of like, I feel like an old school 80s baseball, you would dive into a pitch to get hit by a ball, and the same in every other sport.
Okay, is this based off Draymond Green?
Yeah.
Okay, he was on Kevin Durant's podcast, and let me play it. He called out today's players. Do we have
that? I think when we won the first championship, D. West said it after we won the championship.
Yeah.
My mom even asked me then, all of what going on?
Oh, this is Draymond talking about drama. There's another soundbite here about today's players being soft with Draymond Green. I'll get that for you coming up next hour.
At baseball, too, they're way like... Back in the day, you would take a pitch.
But isn't this every old school or from another generation calls out the new generation as being soft? Like, is anybody in the new generation tougher than somebody from the old generation or previous generation? We'll check in with the Patriots. Are they thinking about moving up to number four, drafting a quarterback? And The Miz, the great wrestler, will join us coming up as well. One more item as we close out the first hour. It's rockauto.com. All the parts your car or truck will ever need. Rockauto.com is a family business founded by automotive engineers in 1999. And they started out with two goals. First of all, they want to give you access to the parts information that's hidden in the computers and catalogs behind the parts store counter. And second, they just want to give you the opportunity to get low prices on this. That was it. Kind of simple, right? Well, they've done great. RockAuto.com has the parts for both old and new cars. You can't just pour 10W30 oil into just about every engine you like from 30 years ago. RockAuto.com has specific oil, transmission fluid, antifreeze, and other chemicals your car has to have. You don't waste time and money hunting for the parts, phoning, driving, waiting in lines. Go to rockauto.com today. Make sure you tell them we sent you. You just write Dan Patrick in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. All the parts your car or truck will ever need, rockauto.com. rockauto.com.